and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast that believes the future of financial services is open, brought to you by Finastra. I'm your host, Emily Nicole, tech editor of City AM, and we are really glad you can join us today. We have a great show coming up asking, is regulation hampering innovation in banking? I'm joined today by Ed Vasey, the Member of Parliament for Didcot and Wantage, and previous Minister for Culture and the Digital Economy, responsible for the rollout of many significant technology and media initiatives.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well.
And then we're also joined by Ellie Rosner, Chief Product and Technology Officer of Finastra, the financial services software company that is building an open development platform for financial services. Ellie is the architect of this open platform, FusionFabric.cloud. Hi, Ellie.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
So before we discuss whether regulation is or isn't hampering innovation in banking, perhaps the first question to Ed is whether regulators should play an active role in fostering innovation.
Well, the answer to that is yes. I think that regulators should play an active role in fostering innovation. You know, in politics, regulation can be a dirty word. Politicians love to stand up and say we're going to have a bonfire of regulations and get rid of all regulation. I don't agree with that. I think consumers benefit from regulation, and regulation in financial services, of course, is important because people put their money into banks, their life savings. They want to know that it's secure. They want to know that people aren't going to steal from them or the bank isn't going to go bust. So it's important to have regulation, but at the same time, it's also important that politicians don't sit back and assume that regulations that were designed 10, 20, 30 years ago have kept pace or somehow fit for purpose with everything that's going on. And I think that the UK government, particularly in the early 2010s, was very aware of this and wanted to partner with tech companies and innovators to look at how regulations could be updated and adapted. We did it ourselves in terms of more open government, allowing companies, for example, to use government data. A lot of the transport apps, for example, that people use today depend on the kind of data that hitherto was sort of locked away and not being used. So there's a lot of benefit in throwing the data out there and seeing what private companies can do with it. And also, obviously, in financial services, it's important that these companies are able to partner with government. I think the Financial Conduct Authority is widely held in high regard across the globe for its sandbox initiative. And in terms of saying to companies, okay, what product do you want to produce? What kind of tweaking of regulations could we do that have a win-win, keeping the consumer safe, but allowing you to produce innovative products for the consumer? And of course, I'm a bit nervous saying this in the age of Brexit, but a lot of this open banking regulation actually did start in Europe and came from Europe. And Ellie, you're in a much better place than me to talk about European regulation and how that's kickstarted the financial services.
Sure. Regulation. Thanks, Ed. So yes, you're right. I'll build on top of what I just shared with you, which was very insightful, by the way. It was PSD2 at the beginning of last year, which catalyzed the movement towards open banking. The aim of the reform was to make the banking sector more competitive. Essentially, what it does, it changes the way that financial institutions handle our information, our financial information, and they're giving us back control of the information. That means that we can opt in and out of services and decide who we give access to the information. It's a fundamental change to the way banks are doing business. In the past, it used to be that if you have established a relationship with the bank, you usually stay with them for many years. It was a monumental effort to go and switch your financial relationship with a different institution. So what PSD2 does, for example, is just opening it up, and the banks do not own our data anymore. We control what we do with our data. To achieve this, the banks have had to develop an open API, which is like connectors between different technology systems, to enable the data sharing and expose the data based on our consent, the consumers, to share our data to third-party providers that can take it and build very creative applications, again, as you said, to enable us to better secure our data and manage our money better. So those reforms have started in the European Union with PSD2. You got GDPR. And in the UK, it was even more driven with the CMA open banking mandate.
And so obviously, even with the advent of all this regulation, some institutions are still struggling to keep up, others are jumping ahead while others are falling behind. From a recent study held by Finastra, financial institutions gave three primary barriers to innovation that they said they're coming up against. The first one of those was complex regulatory requirements. We've seen those before. Two, a lack of suitable fintech solutions. And thirdly, educating decision makers. What advice or insights could you offer them, Ed, as a decision maker yourself?
Well, I think all of those are perfectly legitimate criticisms, if you like, or concerns from the fintech industry. And I recognise all three of them. If you start with the complexity of regulation, you know, if you talk to the challenger banks and the founders, they will say that getting a banking license was literally the most complex and difficult task they had undertaken, more complex and difficult than building the platform for the actual bank itself. So that kind of thing has got to be made more simple. And I think at the heart of that lies a sort of fundamental shift from government, which again, the government digital service for a period in the 2010s did do. It sounds a very, very simplistic phrase, but it's what is the user need? You should always start by saying, what do people want and how can I deliver it to them? So if you want to encourage innovation in financial services, you should be trying to put yourself in the mind of a founder and say, what do I want? How easy is it for me to start a bank? But again, and this will be a theme we, I'm sure, keep coming back to, always mindful as well that the other user is the consumer and needs to be protected. But you need to simplify these regulations for tech companies that are coming in to the marketplace. You know, we had an initiative, for example, to allow people to port their bank account number in the same way they can port their mobile phone number. That still hasn't happened. Those kind of simple changes could be made with the right will. I also find it's very important when you talk about regulation to remember who the regulators are. It's not just the politicians, it's also the civil servants. I'll turn to that in a minute. As far as lack of suitable fintech solutions are concerned, I mean, I do think there's a lot of innovation coming into the marketplace, but I still think, funny enough, we're in early days because, in effect, at the moment, we're in a period where people are taking, as it were, analog banking and translating it to digital. So I do things on my phone that I used to do in a bank branch on the high street, but I still have a current account. I still have a deposit account. I still have direct debits. I think that will change over the next few years and the kind of concept of a current account will go, and there'll be a sort of mix of how you use your money. You're using it to pay your mortgage, you're using it to save for your retirement and so on. That will become sort of more jumbled up and more flexible. I think that in terms of educating decision makers, obviously as a politician, I'm automatically on the defensive because I'm used to the tech community saying again and again, oh, politicians don't understand tech, to which my answer is always, well, tech don't understand politicians. We have to navigate the public policy space. As I say, we have to protect the consumer. We have to be aware of all those issues. We can't just wave a magic wand and let every entrepreneur with a great idea just go into the marketplace. There do need to be, in my view, checks and balances. But what I would also say is that politicians and, importantly, civil servants do need to be more proactive. I've come across again and again fintech startups that are clearly going to be offering a great service to customers and solving a problem, solving a paperwork problem or a bureaucracy problem, and potentially a win for government by generating more revenue as a result. But the minute a minister meets them and says, yeah, that's a great idea, carry on, they get bogged down in the sort of officials and regulation because, as you would expect, in government, it is far safer to say no than it is to say yes, because if you say no, you mitigate the risk of failure. And I think government needs to say yes more often. But with that does come risk. There will be failures, but government has to say that is potentially a price you pay for the kind of innovation consumers should be getting.
And we've even seen some of that risk come to the fore in recent weeks with the Treasury Select Committee in the UK recognising that while digital banking is advancing and things are happening and people are making changes, it's falling on other institutions in the UK to kind of pick up the slack where banks are going increasingly more digital, like the post office. It's a UK-only problem, but we could probably see that happen elsewhere in the world too if things start to go the way they are now with banks becoming branchless.
I think that's a really good point. You know, I am obviously that terrible individual, a member of the Liberal Metropolitan Elite. For me, you know, a cashless society is something I would welcome. You've got countries like Sweden where I think now cash is down to about 10% of the economy. And it obviously suits government to have a cashless society because there's less of a black market. But that is a really good example of where the policymaker has to think slightly more widely than the entrepreneur. You have to think, frankly, about people, the kind of people who live in my constituency, which is still relatively rural, who will be taking, you know, cash from their shop and wanting to put it, walk to a bank branch to bank it. And also, of course, people from the older generation who are much more used to an older version of banking and perhaps less able to adapt to new kinds of banking. So government has to think, how do we make sure that with all this innovation providing great new products, we don't actually leave people behind in a way that actually potentially harms them?
And so, Ellie, from the industry perspective, who do you think is finding it hardest to navigate regulation? And for those that are finding it hard, does that mean that potential innovation is being stifled?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. If you look at the two sides of the market, so to speak, if you look at the new entrants, sometimes referred to as challenger banks or fintechs in general, versus the incumbents, right? So there are several thousands of fintechs around the world. There's about 350 specifically challenger banks in the world, with the UK, by the way, being the highest number of those challenger banks, and they're growing at about 20% a year. So they do see things very differently. We found in a recent survey that specifically in the UK, the perception is that regulation is more favorable towards the new entrants versus the incumbents. If you compare the strengths and the weaknesses of the incumbents versus the new entrants, the challenger banks, you can see that one's weakness is the other one's strength. For example, banks, the incumbents, right, the financial institutions, are really good dealing with regulation. They've been doing it for years. They have all the infrastructure, the processes, and they know how to deal with the regulatory body. Challenger banks, on the other hand, are new. They're usually very small, more agile companies. On the other hand, their technology is cloud and mobile from the get-go, as opposed to the traditional financial institutions that have a very heavy burden of legacy systems. So they look at regulation as something that helps them getting level the playing field, so to speak, the challenger banks, because it enables them to compete, it opens it up. And at the same time, they got to the point today where the fintech specifically understand that to succeed, they have to collaborate together with the financial institutions. So while after the thousands of fintechs out there, only 350 are challenger banks that are essentially competing with the incumbent banks, the other fintechs are much more about collaboration with the banks. Another thing to think about is that the winners of the next 5 to 10 years are going to be those companies that understand that it's not just about technology, as Ed was saying, but it's also about transformation to a platform-based business model. And there are other companies in other industries, prime examples, of course, Uber, Airbnb, that develop multi-sided networks and bring participants into this network to play. And the more participants you have on one end, it's better for the other side and vice versa. So to us, the future of innovation in banking has to do with opening it up to both challenger banks, fintechs, and banks, and bringing them open together for collaboration.
And something that has shown a lot of promise in helping achieve that goal is regulatory sandbox. You mentioned them earlier, Ed, in Singapore, the Netherlands, and also here in the UK. Why do you guys think that such environments are so important to having innovation?
Well, I think they're a great model for the future of regulation. They're a safe space. What they do is they allow, in this case, challenger banks and so on, but I think it would be useful in many other areas to test their product and to work with regulators to say, okay, this is what we want to do. How do we fit in with your existing regulations? What do we have to tweak in our product that makes sure that we comply with existing regulations? So when we launch, we don't suddenly come up against some hurdle, but it's also very good for policymakers and regulators as well to think, hold on, this is a particular hurdle that's going to take these guys a lot of time to get over or a lot of cost to comply with. Is there any way we can change it that doesn't, as I keep repeating, doesn't unintentionally affect or put at risk the consumer? So, as I say, my understanding is that the sandbox has worked now with kind of hundreds of startups, not across banking, insurance, and so on and so forth. And it's a complete win-win. It's a learning experience for the regulator, and it's an opportunity for innovators who are always pushing the envelope in a good way, pushing the boundaries, to check that they nevertheless sit within a kind of compliance framework that works for the consumer.
But it's not just regulators that are doing these sandboxes either, is it, Ellie?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, we're very excited about the potential to build financial services applications in the cloud through FusionFabric.cloud. Our platform allows companies across the world, incumbents and new entrants, to co-innovate together in an environment that is controlled, and that's the sandbox. So no harm can be done. The data in the sandbox represents how the data looks, but it's not real data about any specific individual or a corporate. The open APIs that comes together with the platform and enables those sandboxes to actually work is tested in a way that was never done before. So as a challenger bank, or as a fintech, or as a bank, you can come, sign up to play in the sandbox. It's free, by the way. So we're bearing all the cost of that. We're inviting people because we truly want to encourage open innovation. So we made it very easy for participants, banks, challenger banks, fintechs, to come and play with those sandboxes. And as Ed said, those regulatory sandboxes, for that matter, are an environment. It's a safe environment for participants to come and play together and test applications before they actually decide whether they want to roll them out or not. We would certainly like to see a further iteration of the UK regulatory sandbox, which is able to engage more easily with open banking and cloud technologies.
So, well, that was a lovely discussion to have. We covered things like open banking, who is facing troubles with innovation, and what we can do to help progress innovation further, whether that's through sandboxes on a regulatory side or a company side. Thank you very much to Ed and Ellie for joining us today and to our listeners. To find out more or to find our other podcasts, visit us at www.finastra.com or follow us on Twitter and join in the conversation at FinastraFS using the hashtag OpenFinance.
Thanks so much, Emily.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.